time to get up, get out of bed. Fill your cup and get ahead with WKGN. 1-3-4-0.
Now from the studios of Fox Sports Knoxville, this is 3 and Out with Nate Hodges and Houston Kress. Fan Run Radio.
Rick Barnes from the Tennessee Volunteers all raised their shirts. They are the SEC Tournament Champions. Mark will hold it, and so he and the Volunteers will hold the trophy. SEC Tournament Champions to match their regular season title.
You know who Hendon Hooker is, returning quarterback for Tennessee, a dark horse Heisman candidate.
Haven't even said it on my own airwaves yet. I think Tennessee's going to beat Georgia this year.
Assuming it's not Alabama, it's not Georgia who wins the SEC, what other team is there that could challenge for the SEC title?
Well, I'm a little curious about Tennessee. I think it's going to be a lot of fun to see if they can make that step and be a division contender.
I guess there's only one thing left to do.
What's that?
Win the whole thing.
Yes!
Cause your friends don't dance, and if they don't dance, well, they're no friends of mine. Say, we can go where we want to, place where they will never find. And we can act like we come from out of this world, leave the real one far behind. We can dance. We can go when we want to, night is young and so am I. And we can dress real neat, but my hat's to our feet, and surprise them with a victory cry. Say, we can act if we want to, if we don't, nobody will. And you can act real rude and totally removed, and I can act like an imbecile. Say, we can dance, everything's out of control. We can dance.
Off and running in the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios of Fan Run Radio, it is 3 and Out. What are you looking at me like that for? I can tell there's a little bit of a difference there. That's all. It's just
you're coming in fine back here.
That's good. I'm glad.
Great to the ear as well.
I'm glad. Houston Kress, Adam Hickman, intern Brett with you. It is a Throwdown Thursday. We got game recap. We have bowl projection talk. It is Thursday night football tonight. Who's playing? I can't even remember.
Bills Patriots.
That's right.
My Bills. Versus my former Patriots.
Tom Brady does not play for the Bills. You do not get to claim the Bills as your team. There are rules on this show. Rules in sports radio. You can't just flip-flop back and forth to whichever one is doing better.
But he might go back to New England.
Who?
Brady.
Yeah, that's the talk.
No.
It is also happy December 1st, too.
Oh, God.
Which means every bumper from now until after Christmas will be Christmas music.
Every bumper? Have enough in the system,
yeah,
buddy.
I have enough to get by today, and then there are enough Christmas songs for me to make do.
Yeah, but that would require you to actually do like a bunch of recording and work and putting them in the system. Have you thought any more about your elaborate scheme?
What scheme?
Well, I don't want to say it out loud because
yeah.
Feels like you have a pretty good opportunity here coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you were to enter more Christmas music into the system. Maybe some very popular titled tunes. Yeah, you never know. Maybe make its own folder and everyone's just like, oh, thank God, someone made a Christmas folder.
Yeah, I'll get on that, yeah.
I'm just saying it could be a good idea.
I'll try and sneak that in once I get our new intro done.
Are you working on that?
Yeah.
Yeah. When can we expect that from you since you're working on it?
Probably once bowl season wraps up.
Bowl season wraps up.
Yeah, once basketball really starts hitting the ground running here.
January 10th.
Yeah, we'll probably need it before that. Just an idea.
I mean, that's like the –
I think think the national championship's like the 8th or 9th.
That's the long-term projection, you know?
Okay. Well, that's good to know. Glad you're on top of that. Are you going to do any of this stuff that you're talking about? Like, are you actually going to put in new Christmas songs? Or
no, I will, because I already got...
In the elaborate scheme?
I already got the first Christmas song I'm going to put in the system.
What is it?
Merry Christmas from the Family. Earl Keane did it.
I'll listen to it during the break. I'm sure I've heard it. It just doesn't sound familiar off the top of my head.
Hot take, though.
Okay,
I like the Montgomery Gentry take better. R.I.P. Troy Gentry. Helicopter crash. Similar to Kobe. Mom got drunk and Dad got drunk at our Christmas party. We were drinking champagne punch and homemade eggnog.
Are you singing this or talking? Is this iambic pentameter here? I'm confused.
Little sister brought her new boyfriend. He was a Mexican.
Grandma.
Yeah, I don't. I'll listen to it.
I'm getting recommendations now. I'm about to start a list.
Check it twice.
Tennessee Christmas by Alabama. Add it to the list.
Well, Alabama sure did write a lot of damn songs about Tennessee. You know it?
Yep, you know.
When you know, you know. Tennessee basketball last night. I was so close, guys. I'm so upset. I needed 5 more total points in this game. I needed a 3 by Tennessee and a layup by the Cowboys, and I would have nailed the final score of 79-42. Was not the prettiest game.
No.
But the Vols get it done. They do cover the 35-point spread. I don't know what it swelled to before the game, but when we were talking about it on the show, it was 35. I had the Vols to cover. They win by 36. It's fine. First half was not very good offensively. Defense was sensational pretty much all night long. They did hit a stretch kind of the 5 to 7 minute mark left in the game where felt like McNeese was getting a few open looks, knocking down some shots. Tennessee scores 46 points in the second half. This is kind of the way this team plays, I think. And this is typical of any basketball, really any sport, unless you're just that much better than the other team. If you start scoring more, you tend to give up a little more on the other end. First half score was 30-14. Tennessee gives up 14 points in the first half. Second half, they scored more, gave up more, but the margin was even larger, 46-26 in the second half. Again, 76-40, your final score. Leading scorer for Tennessee, he continues his run, Santiago Vescovi, 33 minutes, 5 of 13 from the floor, 4 of 12 from 3, 16 points. He was tied for your second leading rebounder, I guess technically third, because Kumwa and Jonas Adu finished with 6 apiece. Tyreek Key drops in 10, Olivier Kumwa 11, Julian Phillips drops in 12. Those are your double-figure scores. Juroš Plavšić in 13 minutes gets 5 rebounds. So I think that's fewer minutes and the same amount of rebounds as his game against Kansas.
Might be a career high.
No, it's not a career high. What are you talking about? It's not a career high. You're career high. You're high all the time. Did you watch the game? That's a no. Okay.
No.
Didn't even watch the game.
I did watch the game, but I mean, let's be honest. It was kind of hard to stay locked in for 40 minutes of basketball last night when that was the product.
We covered 35 points.
Like, that's not a knock against Tennessee. I mean, it was just bad basketball. I told you what it reminded me of before the show. Two rocks having sex. Just
can't say I've ever seen that.
Kind of hard to watch at some point, but.
No one's ever watched that. They're rocks. You're just making stuff up at this. Like, have you heard that before?
No,
I didn't think so. Tennessee forces 24 turnovers by the Cowboys. Only commits 11. That's not bad. I feel like that's a number you can live with if you're this team. Although I will say some of them were pretty sloppy at times. I feel like Ziegler had one really bad one, but as I look at the stat sheet, it was one turnover, and it was a bad one. Mayshak gets 21 minutes last night, 2 turnovers, 4 points. He did have 3 assists and 3 rebounds.
I feel like you'll take that out of him every night.
Yeah. Does it feel like his minutes get pretty diminished, though, once we get to league play?
I mean, once Josiah gets healthy.
Yeah,
it feels like, that's going to eat into his. We talked about that yesterday a little bit. With what Phillips has been doing lately, he was a monster last night on the defensive end of the floor. And I don't know if you guys saw what he said in the post game, but they asked him, because he played 30 minutes last night, and he played 38 minutes, I believe, against Southern Cal. And they asked him, are you getting tired after these games? And I couldn't help but laugh at his answer. He said, no, the games aren't that bad because Rick Barnes' practices are ridiculously tough. We train for this. And all I could think of is our long-running joke on the show that when Tennessee plays poorly, it's because Rick Barnes had them run hours of wind sprints the day before. But it appears to be paying off for Julian Phillips. Going to be pretty hard to remove him from the starting lineup if he continues to play like this, even with the return of Josiah Jordan James. I don't know what you do at that point if you're Rick Barnes. And maybe it's matchup dependent, but it feels like you probably just slide Kumwa to the five, James into the three or the four with Phillips there, and then rotate in a big as needed depending on the opponent. Because Plavsic in the last few games, and granted, he is coming back from a little bit of an injury, so maybe he's still not quite 100%. Kind of same with Josiah Jordan James. Obviously, Plavsic healthy enough to play. Hickman, Plavsic did not miss a shot last night, by the way.
He took one.
Yeah.
It was a big one.
I mean, he missed some free throws, but that's different.
The whole
he missed is, net rim backboard on some free throws or a free throw.
Did he airball one?
Yeah, he airballed one.
Like a true airball?
Oh, yeah.
Are you sure? I don't feel like I remember that. I don't remember an air ball, and I watched the whole game. Yeah. I'd have to go.
19 of 34 from
and
the line is not good.
No, it was a little better in the second half. Were they 9 of 18 in the first half?
Yeah.
That's not going
to
get it done.
Line, I guess, but you need to start knocking some of those down.
Yeah, if you're going to get to the line, though, you got to make. I feel
you do like 21 assists on 23 made field goals.
Yeah, and that we knew that was going to happen. McNeese State. I guess it's just McNeese. Not very good at defending as far as getting guys open looks. They're the worst catch-and-shoot team defensively, yeah. I think, in the country, and Tennessee's among the best offensively.
Yeah.
So we kind of figured that was going to happen last night. Again, 11 turnovers.
What was the guy's name Hickman was talking about yesterday?
The guy who was going to bend us over the barrel.
Yeah. I didn't say that. I said he's our best player and he's a guy to watch out for.
No, you said he's going to
eat
Plavsic's lunch, I believe. He played 35 minutes and had 8 points.
How many rebounds?
Six.
12.
It was 12. It was 12. Wasn't that Shumate and they were talking about?
Shumate.
He did have 12 rebounds.
Are we sure it's Shumate? Is it Shumate?
It's not Shumate.
I don't know.
I guess it could be. I don't know. I had it on mute. I was doing other things. So you did watch the game, Hickman. You're sure?
Yes, I watched the game. No, I mean, I turned it off with about 5 minutes ago in the second half. I'm not going to lie.
Had other things to do. Very busy on a Wednesday night.
I started a new TV show last night.
Oh, yeah. What is it?
Fire Country. That comes on CBS.
We'll go to the Big Orange Phillies phone lines, get Matt in this first segment so we don't have to hear about Fire Country.
No, that's a really good show.
The Big Orange Phillies phone lines we go.
I'll tell you more about it later.
Yeah, that's fine.
Hey, Matt.
Good morning, Matt.
Fire Country sounds like Two Rocks Having Sex to me.
Thank you, Hickman.
That was funny, dude. And he's got a point, dude. Offense is...
No, Josiah's out. Phillips is a newcomer. Played a lot of guys. I kind of expected this. This has kind of been the case the last few years. We start out slow a little bit offensively, but this is also, according to KenPom, the best college basketball defense of all time by a full point. So, and now granted, it's early, but we have had a pretty good schedule so far. I mean, with Butler, USC, and Kansas. This has the potential to be the best defense in the country, and if the offense can just keep pace and pick up a little bit as the season goes on, I think you feel pretty good.
You think Triple J makes? You think he makes that much of a difference? I know this might be a really weird take. I just don't think he's. I don't think he's the best player on the team. First of all, I think he's good. I don't think he comes back and all of a sudden you're scoring 85 points a game though.
It depends on what his role is. Like, if he comes in and starts and we move out Phillips, then I don't know if your scoring production picks up. But I think, obviously, it's depth, right? Like, he is an important piece for depth, and that means if he starts or Phillips starts and one of them picks up some fouls, like, you've got guys you can rotate in. And this does appear to be, so far, a pretty deep and talented team. I agree with you. I don't think he's the best player. I think as this season goes on, there's a chance he becomes your most important player. He's your leader.
He
gives great effort on defense. He's kind of a calmer on the court when things start to. I think we all remember the moment last year where Rick Barnes comes onto the court and he's chewing Kennedy Chandler's.
And Josiah stepped in between.
Yeah, he got between him and was like, "Coach, no, not. He doesn't need that right now. We don't need this right now. Let's get to the huddle. Let's." I like that leadership. And Barnes, Barnes didn't panic and freak out and throw a fit. He was like, "Okay, yeah, this is my guy, and I trust him. Let's get to the huddle and try to get this fixed." So I think he adds a lot to the team. I do think, though, however, Matt, based on what we've seen, clearly he's not a necessity for this team to have a lot of success. And I think a lot of those qualities he brings, you can still add parts of them from the bench, but I do think it's important that he gets back and healthy, for this team to reach their full potential.
I mean, Meshack has pretty much stepped in, gotten a lot of Josiah's minutes, but Meshack's not a guy who has the ability to really get hot from three like Josiah has at times.
Yeah. If he gets hot, it's going to be in transition, steals, cuts to the basket, that type of thing.
Taking charges, blocks.
Just. Right. I don't want to say a glue guy, but he plays the game a lot differently. Josiah's had games where he gets really hot from three, goes 6 of 8, and has 20 points.
Josiah's probably your best on-ball defender, I will say that, Matt. And I think for this team to achieve the goals that it's capable of achieving today, I think Josiah does need to stay healthy, get back to the groove he was in late in the season last year, because one of the holes on this roster is, if you're in a tie ball game late, down one, whatever, and you need a guy to go out there and get a basket and just make his own shot, right now I just don't know who it is. I think Julian Phillips has the potential to mesh into that player.
He's the one that came to mind, but Josiah is pretty good at that little baseline turnaround jump. I don't know if that's the one you draw up and go to.
Or get to the elbow.
Yeah, exactly.
Barnes changed his whole coaching philosophy since he's been here? Because I don't remember him as that much at Texas, how he ran an offense. But I swear I thought that he was more like Bruce was. Like, he was up-tempo, pressing a lot, stuff like that, which we just – it seems like every year we get further and further away from that type of basketball.
I don't remember him pressing a lot. I'm trying to think back. I only remember his game against Bruce Bruce's first year when we went down there, and they were slow to come up the court. They didn't push a lot in transition unless they got steals. Obviously, we tried to press them. And then the next year was a lot different because they had Kevin Durant. They kind of ran everything through him. But I do think he's changed. And I think it's all about personnel, right? Like, and this is something you saw with Bruce Pearl. When he first got here, he's got a bunch of scrappy guys that weren't highly recruited, and he motivated them, and they pressed, and they ran, and they shot a bunch of threes, and they would get hot. And then as he got better players, you got to start running more half-court stuff. And just this is the case with big-time college basketball. You get five stars. I'm not saying they don't want to work hard, but a lot of five-star guys aren't going to go to the school that wants to press and get up and down and really have to defend, 90 feet of the floor. So I think he has changed. Well, and another thing he's changed is, when he first got here, we were taking 10, maybe 15 threes a game. And then we've had two games this year, where we've shot over. Now we've got a couple games this year over 40. We shot almost 30 last night. But last night you could tell they were trying to get the ball down low. They fed Kumwa a bunch, and then a lot of the offense spun off of that. They try to double him if he couldn't get to the rim or get a good look, and then he'd kick out, we'd rotate, and then we'd have a good look for a three or a cutter to the basket.
Yeah, these three teams, it's kind of like our offensive football. When it's hitting, man, and clicking, you're making threes, it's beautiful to watch. But when it's not, my God, man, it is ugly basketball. Speaking of football real quick, it's funny watching Auburn just go through, and I'm sure you guys are going to touch on it, but just go through exactly, it looks like what Tennessee has gone through over the last 10 years. And with what's about to happen with Freeze, they're about to go through just a total crap show, guys.
You think so?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
I think it's a complete coin flip. Like, I could see him having success there, and I could see it. I'll say this. If he has success, it's going to be good to very good. I don't know if he'll win a national championship at Auburn. If it goes bad, it's going to be like nuclear wasteland bad.
Well, I'm talking about the stuff off the field with this girl at Liberty.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, that's the stuff that's going to get. I don't think his football. His football ability, I don't question. I mean, he's a great coach on the field, but the guy's kind of a D-bag, man.
Yes.
Like, you start to see this stuff more and more, and how much he's lied, and then supposedly goes to Liberty, and he's renewed himself, and then you find out actually kind of not. I mean, I don't know, fellas.
Matt, did you watch any of his press conference?
It was the weirdest, most awkward press conference. One of I've seen. I've seen some pretty weird ones, though. Butch Jones had some pretty awkward ones, too.
If he wasn't a football coach, he'd be a televangelist, 100%.
Yeah, I think. And that might be actually what he's doing in the next 4 years. Do you think that if some of this stuff comes out more, that Auburn can – I'm sure there's got to be a clause in there. What's weird about this whole thing is Auburn never talked to the girl at Liberty, which is really they vetted everybody. They said,
yep.
Auburn spoke to everyone and kind of missed the most important key piece here. But
yeah, I was going to mention that when we discussed it. So Auburn claimed,
yeah, I'll be listening, man. I didn't want to. I'm not.
Oh no, you're good. I just think that's so funny that Auburn bragged about their vetting process and their investigation into Hugh Freeze and his past and all. Oh, by the way, there's this thing going on right now that everyone knows about. No, we're not going to talk to her.
Yeah, the most important person.
Yeah, it's like the one that's.
Yeah.
It's like we looked at the stuff 20 years ago and it was bad, but that was 20 years ago. Okay, did you look at the one from last month? Well, no, we're busy. I mean, come on, guys. I mean, he's a good.
It sounds like Tennessee, dude. It's like us 5 years ago. Like, that's exactly a Tennessee thing. Like,
yeah.
You know, just something we would do as a program. You know, I feel for him, man. Because I like Auburn. I feel I hate Bama. I've always kind of been an Auburn sympathizer. But to watch them just – I can see them just nuking themselves right now, and I hate it. I hate watching it. But I love it at the same time. So.
As long as it's not us, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly, 100%.
Thanks for the call, Matt. Appreciate it, buddy.
Auburn is one of those schools, though, that just, you know, being in the SEC East, you kind of find yourself rooting for quite frequently throughout the course of a season, of course, because they always have the Iron Bowl.
They always play Georgia.
So, yeah.
They're the lesser of a few evils here.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I've never met, like, a bad Auburn fan. I'm sure people have had bad experiences. Every fan base has bad people. But take a shot at Trey Wallace, man. No, Trey Wallace is a nice guy. I don't know if he's a true Auburn homer, but – I've never had that problem. I've had problems with Bama fans, Florida fans, Georgia fans. But the problem with Auburn, I think for a long time, has been when you're in the shadows of Alabama, and especially since Saban got there, it feels like, you have to make – obviously, they want to be good. They want to beat Bama. Like, that's the most important thing. And they do typically beat Bama more than anybody else. But when things go bad there – they're kind of like Florida. Like, they're very quick to hit the trigger. Like, oh, we got to roll this guy. We got to get somebody else in here. The problem with the last few hires is it felt like they made a move to fire a coach, and then it's like, oh, wait, we don't have a surefire bet to come in and be better. Like, they rolled the dice with Harsin, and I don't know how you guys felt when that was made. I thought it made no sense. I thought maybe this guy's a really good football coach. He's only recruited – in the Northwest. I mean, he was at Boise. Like, this, I know he was at Arkansas State for a brief stint, and they've had now that they've now hired their third straight, I believe.
Butch is next.
Yeah, Butch is on deck. Like, but the Harsin hire, it felt just like a
weird fit,
a shot in the dark. And I wasn't surprised that it didn't work out. And I was listening to Josh Pate yesterday on the drive, and he said, when you fire Harsin, are you sure you've got a better option coming down the pike? And then he said, is Hugh Freeze better than Brian Harsin? I think on Saturdays you can clearly say yes. The problem with Hugh Freeze is his Sunday through Friday impacting what happens on Saturday. Can that guy keep his nose clean? Can he stay out of trouble? Can he stay out of people's DMs at 12:30 in the morning? Or is he so worried about people talking about him and outside perception that he kind of self-implodes a little bit. It was also really weird that he took some shots at Ole Miss.
Yeah.
Like the whole, I leapfrogged where I was.
I mean, like that's just a sign of an immature man.
Yeah, and I get it, man. Like, you got fired, and I'm sure that stung, but
you had to get fired.
You were under NCAA probation and a bowl ban because of your recruiting. You had the issue with the escorts in Florida. Like, they had to do that. And then I think they asked him about Liberty, and it felt like he didn't say anything. He went, like, straight back to Ole Miss again. It was just very, very strange.
I've always thought he's been a tad bit overrated from a coaching standpoint. I mean, if you look at the guy, I think throughout the course of his career, his conference win percentage is below 500, maybe.
Is that right?
It might. I'm pretty sure. I think I read that somewhere the other day. It's been a couple of days once he first got started with the rumors that he was taking the job. And then, just realistically, Ole Miss was probably the best fit for him he was ever going to find. I mean, it's a lot easier to be the team in Mississippi than go to Auburn, Alabama,
yeah,
and play second fiddle your entire tenure there to Alabama from a recruiting standpoint.
It's also easier, though, to get away with cheating at Auburn because they have a better, quote-unquote, cheating infrastructure in place. And now with NIL, he doesn't have to worry as much about that. I mean, don't get me wrong. Now that NIL started, there's still going to be people that get popped for doing it the wrong way. I mean, we saw the investigations open up last year with Texas A&M and some others. Like, that's still going to happen. But it's going to be a lot easier to mask some of that and just say, oh, no, this was NIL. So the problem he had at Ole Miss was he got there and immediately went to – I mean, he got Kim Dichie, he got – who was the receiver from Chicago? Laquon Treadwell. There were a couple others. I think Laquon Treadwell never even visited Ole Miss and signed with him once Hugh Freeze got there. And it's just a head-scratching thing of, this guy's from Chicago. He's going to Oxford, Mississippi, and he's never been there?
Yeah, that's red flag.
Yeah,
red flag.
And who was Laramie Tunsil? He got Tunsil, too. And then all those guys had major issues, you know, kind of down the road. And then, obviously, he gets popped for some recruiting violations and other off-the-field, quote-unquote, violations. But we'll see. I think it's a fascinating case study of kind of an SEC retread. I mean, it's kind of worked for Ole Miss with Lane Kiffin. We'll see if it works for Auburn with Hugh Freeze. We'll hit a quick break, come back. Did have a couple more points about the basketball game I wanted to make. Obviously, it feels like the hot topic yesterday was playoff rankings and then the bowl fallout as far as Ohio State. So we'll get into some of that stuff.
And pedophiles in college football.
Yeah, we'll talk about that too. It's 3 and Out on Fan Run Radio. It took Adam Hickman exactly 1 second to break his rule of nothing but Christmas music for every bumper from now on until Christmas Day.
Well,
literally, you just said no. Hang on. Let me finish. You literally said it's nothing but Christmas music. I have enough to get me through today. It is nothing but Christmas music from now on.
I actually might not have enough.
The very next bumper is not Christmas music. And now you're saying you don't have enough to get through today. Apparently, you don't have enough to get through the next intro. That was the first bumper of the day. And it wasn't Christmas. You said Christmas music. Try to get people in the spirit. It's the spirit of giving, of thanks, of love, of being merry. And what song was that? Who was that?
That was Tyler Childers.
I don't know. Okay.
You don't know Tyler Childers?
I mean, I've heard the name, yeah.
Oh, Chris.
What? Like, I mean.
Oh, man.
It's not bad. Look, I mean, it's a fine song. It's just not my cup of tea.
Okay. I'll play you some more during the break.
No, it's fine. It's fine. It's
no, it's not fine.
What I have to be, Okay. That was some real country music. It was the Burger King ad song that popped up on ESPN. Sorry, I was listening to the RJ Young Tennessee Bama rant during the break. Good for him.
I always wondered what RJ Young looked like.
Now you know, and that he sounds like Kevin Hart on helium.
Yes. But he's saying what we're all saying, right?
But I hear him on Fox. He doesn't sound that
I
that high.
I had never heard him before.
Is that the same RJ Young? I feel like it is, but for some reason I thought the RJ Young on Fox was very NFL. I don't know. Maybe yeah. maybe it's a different guy, but this guy goes to bat for Tennessee.
Yeah, he does.
And I appreciate it. Did you guys see the alley-oop attempt from Julian Phillips last night? Hickman, it might have been under the 5-minute mark, so I'm not sure if you saw it. Did you see it?
No, I did not.
It was almost like Jordan Bowden part 2.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah. And he's right-handed, is he not?
Yeah.
Yeah, he goes up, and the ball's a little bit outside on the alley-oop coming in from the right, and he goes back with his left hand and catches it. And almost like it would have been like easily a top 10 play, maybe the number one play, and probably the Tennessee basketball dunk the best dunk since the Jordan Bowden against Vanderbilt alley-oop from inbounds play.
All right,
that guy's a freak.
Do you think the Jordan Bowden alley-oop against Vandy is a better dunk, or do you think Admiral's dunk against Mississippi State in the SEC tournament's better?
Oh, they're so different.
I think
Bowden's was out of nowhere.
Yeah, like yeah. When you look at time and situation, like I hate using this example, but it's kind of one of those plays that if it doesn't happen in that game, you don't know if you win or not.
Vandy one?
Yeah.
Bowden's? Yeah.
Just because of how bad and ugly that game was for Tennessee, and that kind of sparked the
I don't disagree with that. Like that came at a really good time when you needed a bucket, and because it was so emphatic, it felt like it fired everybody up. I don't remember what the score was. I know you were starting to kind of pull away from Mississippi State in the SEC tournament game. In fact, I think Andy Kennedy on the call is saying, yeah, we're in a building ready to explode. And then Admiral goes up and posterizes that guy. I don't know. I feel like maybe alley-oops have their own category. I mean, I realize they're obviously a dunk, but something about taking a guy off the dribble and dunking on them is different than catching. I would say Bowden's was more acrobatic and Admiral's was more thunder. Because that guy got absolutely ate a lot. Didn't they call a foul? Didn't they call a block on him on that play, too? Wasn't that a three-point play?
Yeah, three-point play.
Yeah, so that obviously helped there. And then you pull away and beat Mississippi State. And that one, oh, man. Like, the Bowden dunk, to your point, Hickman, was more, I guess, exciting. But it was also still like, we're still down 4. Like, we still don't know if we're going to win the game. Obviously, we went on to win the game, and that helped. But once Admiral dunked all over that guy, you were like, oh, okay, these guys are done. We're about to go and pull away from them, and we did.
Personally, I think I lean more towards the Jordan Bowden dunk. I mean, like, seeing the Vanderbilt students who you could, like, see on TV when he dunked it were just like, what?
Do you remember the crowd, though, after Admiral's?
Yeah. I mean, the crowd went insane.
Yeah, like, Pons and Grant are over on the bench, like, fainting because of the dunk. I mean, I don't know. They both had their crowd shot moments. Love a good one hand, just cock it back and slam it through, though.
Oh. You got to look at the difference in the crowd, though. On the road at Vanderbilt.
No, I know. Yeah.
A lot of Tennessee fans there, but still, you're on the road. And then against Mississippi State, you know, that was a year where Tennessee was expected to do big, big, big things.
That was in Nashville, right? Yeah. Like we had the crowd on our side for sure in that one. But yeah, Julian Phillips going to be is there any doubt that he's a one-and-done guy at this point? Like, you're starting to see him really emerge and pick things up, and I think he's got just such a good attitude about it. I'll be honest, when we got him – because remember, he was committed to LSU. He was committed to Will Wade, LSU. Will Wade gets fired. He decommits and comes to Tennessee. I know we wanted him before he went to LSU. I had a little bit of reservation because of him picking LSU under Will Wade. I'm thinking, is this guy going to be a good fit here? Man, he's been great.
He bust his ass off on defense,
I know.
Too.
And that's
rare for a 5-star guy.
They asked Adu last night, like, do you like playing defense? He's like, if you come to the University of Tennessee, you better love to play defense. And this team, obviously based on the results we've seen so far this season, not only do they seem to enjoy playing defense, they're very, very good at it. Dane Bradshaw was saying on the broadcast last night, it's one thing to be good in the half court, but McNeese couldn't even get their first pass off to start the offense. The point guard crosses half court. He's trying to start the offense with that initial pass to the side or to the post coming up the middle, and we're denying everything, and there's no backdoor available. There's no pressure release available because this defense is just so sound. So credit to Rick Barnes. And I don't know if this was by design. Obviously, Rick Barnes is a big defensive guy. That's kind of what they start with. But I do wonder if he kind of knew the offense would take a little time to kind of find their stride. So he's focused more on defense early. And hopefully as the season goes on, the offense kind of develops and expands and morphs depending on the opponent. And instead of I think we all watched the USC game and thought, we are so much better than them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see.
But we missed shots.
I don't think we're ever going to be a good offensive team.
I think we're
not
going to
go that far. I'm not going to go that far.
I mean, you seem very dependent on whether Vescovi's making shots.
Yeah, but I think he can make shots. I think Key can make shots. Ziegler can make shots. And if they get more consistent, I think this offense can be really good. They want to shoot a lot of threes. That's clear.
And against a team that scores a man, I think guys like Adu, Kumwa, Euros will be a little bit more effective in the paint. Of course, you know, McNeese, whatever they are now, they ran that very weird zone where when we would get the ball down low, there was so much traffic, so many arms, legs, bodies in the paint.
Southern Cal did that bad. Yeah. Like their zone was really good.
And if you're
causes some trouble.
If you're knocking down your shots, you'll stretch the zone. But
I just never been a big component of having two bigs on the floor because I think that hurts our offense too. Because we talk about us shooting threes, the lane is so clogged. Like maybe when Josiah gets back, you put him at the four. Maybe it spreads the floor a little bit more, get guys to the inside.
Forward. Another shooter on the court as
well. Another shooter on the court. It might open things up a little bit more. I just think with the two bigs in there, it just clogs everything up. Makes it hard to get in the lane.
I think it depends on who the two bigs are. And I'm hesitant to say it, but it feels to me like Adu is right there. Like he is just almost to the point where you look at offense. I mean, he had – how many blocks did he have last night? Oh, 5 blocks.
Yeah.
I knew he had at least 3. Yeah. I didn't know he had 5. It feels like his offensive game is better than Uroš. Yes.
He can stress the floor himself.
That's what I'm saying. His defense is starting to really improve.
He's more athletic.
He can shoot. He's one of the most – not only is he tall and long, but he runs really well for a big man. I feel like he is right there.
Does he feel like Kyle Alexander a little bit?
I don't think he's as fast, but he's bigger. And I think as he learns and gets more comfortable and realizes, hey, you're 7 feet and you've got muscle and you can body people. And he's playing with more confidence this year. That's clear. He's extending fully to block shots. You know, he's not alligator arming his shots when he goes to the rim. Like, that's why I say he's not quite there, but it feels like in the next 5 games, there's the potential for him to really flip the switch to the point where I think you could see him in the starting lineup, especially if Plavšić doesn't start to give you more on offense.
Athletic bigs. Like Arkansas's got athletic bigs. Mm-hmm. Alabama, I think, has got athletic bigs. I mean,
and I think he can defend all those guys.
Oh, yeah.
He gave Shibway hell.
Yeah, we know he can defend Shibway.
He gave Shibway hell last year.
And, well, even Euros can guard him a little bit.
The thing about Adu that I like is when he catches the ball near the rim, if he catches the ball at his chest, it goes from his chest up and he's going to the rim. Euros catches the ball if it's at his chest. It goes dribble, and then next thing you know, the other team's got a fast break going down the court.
Yeah, Plavšić likes to put it on the floor. Kumwa needs to stop doing that a little bit as well. He's been quick to put it on the floor.
Play two bigs, but Kumwa's not any much bigger than Josiah, is he? I mean,
maybe an inch and a half,
maybe
2 inches.
Taller.
He's a lot bigger, but he can stretch the floor a little bit too.
Yeah.
That's why I know they ran it some last night. I'd like to see it in a big matchup where it's Adu and Kumwa as your two bigs.
Absolutely.
And then depending, you can rotate Josiah into the four, maybe slide Kumwa to the five or leave Adu in. It's going to be they've got options. They've got depth.
They're
but
very versatile.
It just,
our team.
Man, it just feels like Adu is right there, like scratching on the door of kick it open and be.
Especially when you saw it against Kansas. Like, do it against McNeese. But to see it when he did against Kansas, really.
Well, I'm just talking about skill set and, like, the way he's playing. And I don't know if it's a confidence thing or if he's still a little bit unsure at times of where and what he's supposed to be doing. But, man, it just feels like the potential is all there for Jonas Adu. And if he can kind of figure it out and put it together, he could be a really, really solid. I mean, I'm talking, like, maybe, like, top 5 to 10 big in this conference because he has all that skill. He has all the ability. We're up against it. We'll hit it. Last break of the first hour. Come back. Wrap it up. It's 3 and Out on Fan Run Radio. final segment, hour number one. Christmas music be damned.
I don't care if you miss that dunk. That picture you just put out on Twitter.
It's so sick.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Like, oh, so close.
Find
too.
The clip for me.
He's almost hitting his head on the backboard.
Hewitt Pruitt sends that in. He's right-handed. Like, he goes and catches that behind his head, left-handed.
I mean, the look at the picture says he dunks that.
Oh, yeah.
Because he has the ball in his hand.
He just went off the back iron.
Yeah.
Plavsic looks about as terrified as you could be. How are you up there that high? How are your feet more than 12 inches off the ground? I'm so confused. Golly, that was so close. So close. We're kind of short-sighted here on this segment, so we'll roll this into the next one. But
I can talk about Fire Country.
Okay, go ahead.
All right.
Fire Country. Let's hear about Fire Country. What is Fire Country?
It's this cheesy CBS show.
You're really selling it so far.
That came out a couple of weeks ago. Now, if there's one thing I've learned, it's that traditionally I like movies and shows that involve fire. Only the Brave. Great movie if y'all haven't seen it.
How do you feel about Backdraft?
I have seen that movie.
It's great, isn't it?
It's a great movie, yeah.
Who's in that?
Josh Brolin, Miles Teller.
Okay.
Will you watch it, Chris?
I might.
It's also sad.
I mean, that's two ringing endorsements for, what is it?
Only the Brave.
Only the Brave. Okay. Yeah.
You at least need to watch the trailer and the break. Let me know what you think.
Okay.
But Fire Country. Guy in prison.
A lot of fires in prison?
Guy gets sent to his hometown in California to work as an inmate firefighter.
Is that a thing?
Yeah. Out there, I'd say it's really popular. You know, reduced sentence, but you go out here, you work as a firefighter.
Okay.
And you provide a service to the community. Makes sense. You know, California, a lot of wildfires. And yeah, that's about all I got so far.
Wait, so it's a guy in prison who goes to his hometown as an inmate firefighter?
Yeah, his dad, I think, is the captain. His mother is on, like, the board or whatever you
want
to call
it. Why is he in prison?
Armed robbery.
Okay.
And he has a beef with one of the town's firefighters. I'm not going to tell you why they have a beef, but
does it involve a girl?
Yes.
Okay.
Who I'm going to guess is the sister of the guy who was in jail. I don't know for sure.
You don't mess with family.
I've only watched one episode.
So you've seen one episode, but you're in?
Yeah, I'm in. I mean, it's no masterpiece, but it's a fun watch.
It's like a 4 out of 5?
Yeah, I'd give it a 4 out of 5.
First episode, 4 out of 5?
Yeah.
Can it keep the pace, you think?
I think so. I mean, that first episode, it was late last night when I finished it.
Fire, straight gas.
Man, I really wanted to watch the second one.
But you didn't?
I didn't. It was like 11:20 when I finished the first one. They're like 45 minutes long.
Mm.
I got to get up early.
Yep, we
do.
We do have to get up early. That's part of the deal. I would agree with that. Is Ohio State really going to just wind their way out of the Rose Bowl?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it's looking like.
I saw some updated projections. The Rose Bowl, or the Orange Bowl, actually tweeted them out. I think it was 5 out of 6 pundits have Tennessee Clemson. And it feels like everybody kind of wants that, with the exception of Ohio State.
And Brett McMurphy.
I just don't like the fact that that puts, and I realize it's a New Year's 6, but, like, forgive me, the Cotton Bowl is not the same as the Orange Bowl or the Rose Bowl. Like, it does not have the same
especially
cachet.
The opponent, possibly Tulane.
Well,
right?
the opponent you can't really control, but in this case, yeah, I mean, it's not even close.
But it is at Jerry World, right? They moved the Cotton Bowl.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So,
like,
better,
it does have some prestige, but the Rose Bowl and the Orange Bowl are still,
right,
when
absolutely.
It comes to just kind of your impression of the bowl, those, you know, people play national championship games in the Orange Bowl and the Rose Bowl.
Probably considered the best bowl, right?
If you ask the Rose Bowl, yeah.
I mean,
no one loves the Rose Bowl more than the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, but I mean, where do you guys? I mean, where would you rank it? Like, as far as bowl games go, if you
Rose
go
Bowl,
to the Rose Bowl,
one.
Sugar used to be up there.
Sugar's lost some luster. I don't know. Like, honestly, maybe the Orange Bowl. There's just something about. I can't remember the last time we played in the Orange Bowl. We haven't played in the Rose Bowl since. In the actual Rose Bowl, we played in Pasadena, but we haven't played in that game since like 1944. So in my head, I'm like, okay, the Rose Bowl, whatever. And normally it's a good game, but I know that stadium is like kind of junk now. It's not as good of a bowl. experience as it used to be. But
I mean, it probably had the greatest game ever played there, Texas and USC.
Mm-hmm, yeah. But I don't know. Like,
was the last time we were there, Peyton, when we got beaten up by Nebraska? Orange Bowl?
Oh, the Orange Bowl, yeah. Yeah, that was the last time we were in that game.
That game. Yeah.
And then we played UCLA in 97 in the Rose Bowl, but it was obviously a regular season game. Yeah. But we haven't played in the Rose Bowl since. No, not in 97.
Oh, yeah.
97.
Did we go there in 94, though?
I can't remember.
When Jerry Colco got hurt?
Was that against UCLA on the road?
I thought it was.
I don't know. We used to play UCLA like every other year. Yeah, I used to like that rivalry. There's some other interesting side notes to this saga.
Yeah.
We'll get to that kickoff hour number two. It's 3 and Out on Fan Run Radio.